Today's biggest stories, tomorrow's newsmakers in the capital city. Your host is Michael Cohen for the Capital City Recap on More Compelling Talk Radio, 1320 WILS.
Wow, Thursday already. These 4-day weeks could certainly become a habit. I'm Michael Cohen with producer Desi Simmons. On today's show, this weekend marks the grand finale for Borders Bookstores as the company closes its last store on Monday. We'll talk about this business debacle. And a fuel transportation safety group says the new pipeline rules being considered in Washington are completely ineffective. We'll talk about that in light of last year's Enbridge oil spill in Marshall. But first, Republican State House leaders are reviewing a comment made by Democratic East Lansing State Representative Mark Meadows in his newsletter this summer that some say may be an endorsement for a replacement as he leaves the office next year due to term limits. To talk about the situation and just where it might lead, I'm joined by State Representative Meadows now. Welcome to the program, Mark.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Now, the underlying issue is that state law does not allow for state resources to be used to make political endorsements. And in your August newsletter, referring to your former chief of staff, Susan Schmidt, you wrote, quote, "It is my hope that she will take my place here when my term limit days are over, and that she is uniquely qualified for this position and would provide the continuity of effort that often is lacking after a transition." That certainly sounds like you're saying she should become the next state representative for the 69th district. Why is that not an endorsement?
Well, it's not an endorsement because she wasn't a candidate, and to the best of my knowledge, she hasn't become a candidate as of even now. Although I just got back from being 2 weeks away, and things could have happened while I was gone. You know, state law actually defines what a candidate is, and Susan doesn't meet any of the criteria that are set forth in state law. And yes, you know, I was encouraging her to run, and I think that's what I said in the newsletter, is that I thought that she would be the best candidate for it. But there's another candidate for it as well, so there is a primary in that particular race, or would be.
This suddenly came up after the newsletter went out in August. Did you have any sense that some might misinterpret this as an improper endorsement?
You know, I was actually taken by surprise by it. I was gone, and one of my staff members had emailed me a MERS report on this. And, yeah, I was a little bit surprised. I was surprised by some of the other comments, too. I had quoted from an article that was written by John Llewellyn, who happens to be a lobbyist, but also, you know, it was an article published in the Michigan Bankers Association magazine. So they indicated that they were critical of the fact that I did that. And frankly, John's a great writer, and he was right on, and that's what I said with regard to the quote. There were a couple other things that they seemed to think I was talking about. I was headed on a 24-hour flight to Croatia, and I said, you know, if I don't make it back or I go down in flames, you know, I want everybody to know that I had a you know, I was very grateful for them to elect me as a representative, and that, you know, don't forget to vote in November of 2012, and they criticized that, too. So I think they were looking for something to criticize. None of this seems like much of a big
deal. What about the political backdrop here? I mean, can Republicans in the House, since they have such a majority, in fact, conclude that this is an improper endorsement?
Sure they could. You know, in fact, you know, the Speaker, whether it's a Republican or a Democrat, you know, has a tremendous amount of authority over the House of Representatives and how it operates. So, you know, I guess in one sense, you hope for good sense, but in one sense, the Speaker's got absolute authority over what happens in the House. So, yes, that could happen. I don't expect it to, but we haven't had a chance to talk yet. I'm just back, and he was not here today, so I'm sure we'll talk next week.
And what are the potential penalties if they do, in fact, conclude, or I guess the Speaker rules against you on this thing?
You know, I think that's unlimited as well. Like you said, under the Constitution and under the rules of the House, the Speaker is the ultimate authority in how staff is allocated, how funds are available for House members to operate their offices and communicate with their constituents. So the Speaker has a whole bunch of authority and has the opportunity to exercise that, and I don't think a court would ever interfere with that. Those are political decisions that have pretty much been defined as, you know, off limits. So the speaker is sort of the main honcho, but also, you know, sort of has absolute power here in the House.
I'm talking to Democratic State Representative Mark Meadows of East Lansing. So I want to talk about this fall agenda, the legislative sessions that are coming up that appear to be quite busy. You know, anytime I talk to either Republicans or Democrats at the Capitol, they always try to give me a sense that things are at least somewhat bipartisan, and the Democrats do in fact have a voice when it comes to a lot of the key legislation that we're seeing. What is your view on what we're going to see coming up, including, you know, the fact that we're going to see the personal property tax addressed, the bridge between Windsor and Detroit? I mean, do Democrats really have any say at the Capitol at this point?
Well, we don't have the votes to say no. I will say that, and that some bills do come through. And I will say this: whether it was when we were in control, meaning Democrats or Republicans. Really, about 80 to 85% of the things that happen in the House are effectively unanimous. In other words, you know, 90 members will vote for them or above, and so most of our activity is very bipartisan. And I think that's just something that the people often overlook when they criticize legislative activity. But when you talk about these potentially controversial or the type of issues that split. People apart, that we have very little say about that. So I know that you know, when we look at what the potential issues are coming into the fall, and you talked about, you brought up personal property tax.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the state doesn't collect that money. Local units of government and school districts collect the money. So half goes to school districts, half goes to local units of government. So it's nice for us to talk about it. And I've had a bill in the legislature two times in a row to reduce the personal property tax, but only with money that will make the school districts and local units of government whole.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a critical element, especially since we have slashed their appropriations this year already, and it looks like we're headed that way again.
So
there are a lot of things mm-hmm. on the docket for fall, and some of them traditionally have really caused the caucuses to separate rather than to work together. And yes, you're right. We have very little to say about that. And we're only included when Republican leadership decides, well, I guess we'll give them a voice.
I wonder, when we talk about the 2012 election, I mean, at this point, the Republican agenda is just being unveiled, it's beginning to be enacted or will be very soon here. Now, what if, in fact, we do see the state starting to turn around based on their strategies, or just based on the cyclical nature of the economy? Could we see, do you think, this Republican majority remain in place through this next election cycle?
I would say yes. I mean, that's certainly a possibility. I don't think it's going to happen only in this sense. I don't think the economy is going to turn around that quickly. I don't think that we're going to build any jobs in Michigan. We're already predicting an additional deficit for next year, so it's and a large one. So the experts are looking at what's happening here, and they're saying things may get worse.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think the governor's plan, the business tax reduction, really equates out with job creation or moving us out of the economic doldrums, at least not in a prompt manner.
I
don't think anybody has that answer, though.
Well, what I want to ask you is, what if Democrats were in control? I mean, would anything really be different in terms of, even if they had a different legislative agenda, could they spur the job market here in Michigan in any way that Republicans are not?
It's a good question. You know, I think that we laid out a jobs agenda right at the beginning of the year, and the bridge was part of that. The bridge can produce a lot of work in the state of Michigan. We estimate up to 30,000 jobs, and I think the governor agrees with us. And that helps us a lot. But when you lose 1 million jobs, which happened over the last decade, it's very hard to make that up with permanency. in a short time frame. So I can't say that any of our programs would have immediate results. I think that we had a better vision for maintaining where we are right now. So when you lay off teachers, when you lay off firefighters, when you lay off police officers, when you lay off other public workers, mm-hmm. like it or not, what you're doing is you're adding to the unemployment rolls. And that means there's less money to spend in stores mm-hmm. throughout the state of Michigan, and that makes the economy worse, not better. And so I think that our programs were designed to at least keep the status quo. And these new programs that have been passed under Republican leadership are really going to end up causing a larger problem for us.
Well, we certainly have yet to see how things will work out. Democratic State Representative Mark Meadows, thank you so much for joining me.
Anytime. Thanks a lot for having me.